Now we're joined in studio by the Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly. Minister, good afternoon and thanks for joining us.
Justin, good afternoon.
When do you expect that we will hit the peak of the third wave of this virus? Because we know that there are now, I think, 3,231 cases and there were 1,923 people in hospital. In terms of hospital admissions, when can we expect the worst or are we over it?
New modelling in from Professor Nolan just in the last few days suggests that this week, or potentially next week, hopefully this week, but in the next week or two, that the hospitalisations and the number of patients in ICU should peak.
Okay, and can you tell us about capacity then? Will there be enough intensive care beds and enough staff to accommodate all those patients who need them?
We've currently got, as you said, 195 patients in critical care and our thoughts are very much with them and with their families right now. It's a very difficult situation. The number in ICU is going to continue to rise. We know it's going to get worse before it gets better. We have surge capacity of 350 critical care beds and then we've deals in place with the private hospitals. They've got 40 to 50 critical care beds as well. So really the focus right now is on making sure that we have the beds. Most importantly, we have the staff. So there's been a lot of work done since the first wave. PPE is fine. The number of ventilators, if you remember, back in March was a very serious concern. Oxygen is fine. About 1,500 nurses have been trained in ICU. So a lot of work has been done. But nonetheless, the system is and will continue to be under very significant pressure for the next few weeks.
Okay, you took a decision last night to suspend the placements of around 2,000 student nurses to free up places for other qualified staff. Why did you take that decision?
The HSE made a request of the Chief Nursing Officer and of the department to suspend the first, second and third year student places just for a few weeks, just while we're in the highest pressure of all of this. What it does is, I'm told, frees up several hundred experienced and qualified nurses who are needed on the front line for the patients right now.
And there's a statement in from SIPTU Union, which represents some of these nurses, and they're saying that their members are furious over the stunning lack of proper consultation. And they say that this decision will only deepen the crisis in the health service. And they're worried about the ramifications it will have for the student nurses and also on patient care. What do you say to them?
It's an operational request from the HSE. They're best placed to know how to deploy the nurses. The view is, and it's a view supported by the chief nurse, it's a view supported by the higher education institutes as well, who were consulted, and indeed by the regulator, that it's the right thing to do for now. It frees up several hundred experienced nurses. They're needed on the front line for patients right now. We want to get the placements back in place, obviously, as soon as possible, because the ongoing education of the students is of paramount importance.
Okay, I'll talk to you in a moment about the vaccine rollout, but it is reported today in Britain that Britain is looking at introducing hotel quarantine for overseas visitors. Are we going to tighten up on isolation rules for people coming into this country?
There's been a lot of tightening up, and certainly we can always look at doing more. So right now, anyone coming into the country has to have a clear PCR test up to 3 days before they fly. If you arrive in Ireland without that, you can be subject to an offence of €2,500 as a fine and up to 6 months in prison. It's very, very serious. And after that, you have to go home. You have to self-restrict your movements for 14 days. If you get a second PCR test on day five, you can go about your business, except, however, for the UK and South Africa, where you have to stay for 14 days. Now, we can always look at tightening these things up.
When you say we can look at it, are you going to do it? Because if hotel quarantine is something that the British government are going to do there, why couldn't we do that here?
Hotel quarantine and indeed putting the regime on a statutory footing for the 14 days and other things we can always look at.
Will you look at it?
When I was first appointed to the post last year, I spoke with Mike Ryan of the WHO, Dr. Ryan, at length about this, and we talked about quarantine, and he was very, very clear. He said, look, you have to be careful with quarantine. He pointed to, I believe it was Australia, where they had mass outbreaks because of quarantine. Essentially, people who were coming in from high-risk countries were all put into the same hotels.
Yeah, but it's working very well for them there now. I mean, you say we could look at it. Are you going to, or is it just something notionally that's out there?
No, it's not notional at all. What I would like to see is measures that increase compliance. The regime is a good regime, so you essentially have to take two PCR tests between 5 and 8 days apart. And then in a lot of cases, on top of that, even when they're both clear, you have to restrict your movements for 14 days. What I would like to see in the public health advice to me is to look at ways that we could tighten compliance. So there are various things that could be done. We can look at putting it on a statutory footing, for example. That was looked at before. And the advice at the time is that it would not have been proportionate. So I'd like to see, given this UK variant and given the huge damage it's causing, is that now something we can look at? And indeed, we're looking at new variants, Justin, from around the world. We have the South African variant, and we also now have a Brazilian variant, which is causing concern. And can I just reiterate that anyone who has arrived in here from Brazil in the last 2 weeks, that's about 1,500 people, they are requested to immediately contact a local GP and get a PCR test and restrict their movements for 14 days.
Okay, I want to ask you about the vaccine. Are you in discussions to get advanced delivery of the AstraZeneca vaccine into the country before it's formally approved, as the Business Post is reporting today?
Earlier this week, I asked the HSC and the task force and the department to look at this. It may or may not be possible, but I know it's something they did in the UK. And my view, and indeed everyone who's working on this on the task force, all of our view is that every single day counts. The vaccines are in the UK. What I would like to see is if it is possible for us to bring the vaccines in ahead of authorization and ideally get them out to the pharmacies, get them out to the GP practices right around the country, because then if the EMA authorises the vaccine and then the European Commission gives its authorisation, there's a statutory instrument I have to sign to authorise it for use here. And rather than spending several days getting it into the country, I'd like to see it here ready to go. However, I have to stress, Justin, there are regulatory issues we're dealing with, and we'd also obviously have to have the cooperation of the company itself. So it's something we're exploring, but is by no means certain.
Okay, there was significant concern among staff in public hospitals this week that private hospital staff were getting the vaccine before them. We've seen that happen, for example, in the Beacon Hospital in Dublin. Why is that happening?
It's because a decision has been taken that there is no difference between a nurse or a doctor working in a private hospital if they're patient facing or indeed working in a public hospital.
But that's not true, is it? Because public hospitals are dealing, as we see from the figures, far more cases of COVID infected patients. So shouldn't they be prioritised when getting the vaccine?
So the second cohort, which is 150,000 healthcare workers, is patient facing. Within that, obviously, there is a sub prioritisation or a more refined prioritisation. They would look to give the vaccine to those who are involved in COVID and COVID patients first, and that is absolutely what needs to be happening. There is a small number of cases where the Beacon, as you say, and some others have got the vaccination, but I think we need to be very clear here. A patient is a patient, and a nurse and a doctor are a nurse and a doctor. And we are not differentiating based on where people work and where people are treated.
We've also heard that in some hospitals, non-frontline staff, the people who wear the suits as opposed to the people who wear the scrubs, were getting the vaccine first. Has that changed?
So the prioritisation, it's the same answer, is that those working in hospitals who are patient-facing are being prioritised. That might be a nurse or a doctor. It might be a hospital porter. It might be someone working in reception where the patients are coming in.
Okay. Now, you're currently prioritising nursing homes. When will all nursing homes be vaccinated?
They'll have had their first dose this day next week. So we've pulled forward about 26,000 vaccinations into the next 7 days. So this day week, Justin, if we were talking, there'd be 140,000 people vaccinated, 70,000 in the long-term residential care setting and 70,000 frontline healthcare workers.
Okay, and the Labour leader, Alan Kelly, is quoted in the Mail on Sunday today in a piece by John Lee, suggesting that focusing on prioritising residential care settings as opposed to frontline workers puts those frontline workers in danger because they're now at the coalface, at the peak of the virus, and they're going to have to wait longer for the vaccine.
I think I read that and I was really very taken aback by Alan Kelly, and I think he needs to explain himself, because it seems to me that what he is suggesting is that we deprioritise women and men in nursing homes. More than half of the fatalities in the first wave last year, 52%, came from those nursing homes. What we're doing, as of next week, we'll have split the 140,000 50-50, half the nursing homes and half the frontline workers. Alan Kelly seems to be suggesting that we should not vaccinate people in nursing homes. I think he is.
I don't think he's suggesting that. He's not suggesting that. He's suggesting that you prioritise people who are at the coal face of the peak of the virus. But look, I'm going to have to leave that matter there. I just want to ask you one final question, Minister. A lot of talk this week about the salary increase for the Secretary General of the Department of Health. How can you justify paying the new Secretary General of the Department of Health a pay increase of €81,000 when student nurses, for example, are getting a pittance for working on the front line?
So the salary isn't for any particular person. It's for the role of the Secretary General of Health. It reflects the very significant additional workload that is the reality of being the Secretary General in Health. It's a budget of €22 billion. And on top of that, obviously, we're in the middle of a pandemic. And on top of that, we have a very, very ambitious reform programme that we need to roll out with Sláinte Care and universal healthcare. It was an approach used last year, or maybe the year before, rather, for the Chief Executive HSE. It was a successful approach, and for those reasons, it's one we're using here as well.
All right. Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, thank you very much indeed for coming in to talk to us today.